for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. On October 1st, open enrollment begins for uninsured Americans as part of the new health care law. Health insurance will be offered through small business or individual exchanges. Health advocacy groups have stepped up efforts to educate people about their options. We talk about those options and whether states will be ready to begin implementing the new programs. Joining me here in the studio, Ron Pollack of Families USA and Enroll America, Julie Robner of NPR, and Joseph Antos of the American Enterprise Institute. I invite you to be part of the program with your questions and comments. Join us, 800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Diane.
And Julie, I'll start with you. Everybody's been talking about October 1. What happens?
Well, on October 1 is when enrollment begins for these new health exchanges. There will be one in every state. Some of them will be run by the states. Many of them will be run by the federal government. That should be invisible to most people. They will go online and they will say, welcome to your exchange, depending on what state you live in.
Suppose you don't go online.
Well, there will be people who to help you. There are a number of different types of people who can help you.
Where?
Believe me, by October 1st, you will know. There is an enormous effort that is just getting underway. It actually launches this weekend, called Get Covered America.
Okay.
There will be all kinds of publicity around that will tell people where they can go to get help if they are not online themselves.
And for the most part, most people are not going to be affected.
That's right. And I think that's the most important thing to start with. We're really only talking about people, not only people who don't have insurance, but people who don't have insurance and are not eligible for other things. Although you can, if you go online to the exchange and you're eligible for Medicaid, for instance, it should then kick you over to how you enroll in the Medicaid program. Or if your children are eligible for the CHIP program, it should then, it's something called No Wrong Door. Wherever you show up to sign up, it will send you to what you are eligible for. But generally, these health exchanges are for people who have income over 100% of poverty, are not eligible for employer-provided insurance. So it's a fairly narrow window of people. It's about 30 million people who will be eligible. For the people who need it, it's very important. These are people who are in the individual market now, who buy their own insurance, people who don't have access to insurance at work, people who've not been able to get insurance because they have pre-existing health conditions.
Okay.
Starting January 1st, insurers will no longer be able to discriminate against those people. So a lot of people have been waiting a very long time for this.
All right. So tell me about this GAO report, what it said, and its relevance to October 1st.
Well, it said, and this is not a great surprise, it said that states and the federal government are behind in getting ready. They're not ready. Now, remember one important thing, and we just saw this GAO report yesterday, the day before, I forget. This was as of May. It takes a while to get these reports out. And it said, and the GAO was very, careful in what it said. As of May, they were behind. They might catch up by October, but everybody's been worried about whether things will be ready on October 1st. And of course, opponents are saying, look, they're not ready. And the administration's saying, we're going to catch up. I think everybody agrees that it's been a big push. There's a lot to do. There are probably going to be glitches, but probably, on October 1st, I think everybody agrees there are going to be exchanges to go to.
One more important fact, and that is they have from October 1st to March 1st
March
31. So they've got a good period of time.
And coverage doesn't begin until January 1st. It's the enrollment that begins October 1st.
Okay. So Ron Pollack, why is there so much confusion about all this? And are you going to, in Enroll America, be able to help people understand?
Well, there are lots of organizations that are working to make sure that We actually move the discussion from a political discussion to a personal discussion.
Okay.
And, you know, despite all the rhetoric and the contentiousness, the vast majority of Americans, particularly those who can benefit from it, are unaware of it. You know, for example, of the folks who are uninsured, who can get tax credit subsidies through the exchanges, over 3 out of 4 are unaware of it. 78% are unaware of it. There's even a higher percentage of those who are eligible for Medicaid, who could get real big help through the Medicaid program, who don't know about it. 83% don't know about it. So there are many organizations across the country. Enroll America is playing a key role in this. And there are many organizations that are diverse. They range from those that were strong supporters of the Affordable Care Act to even those that were opponents of different parts of the Affordable Care Act or even the entire thing, but they think it would be a good thing if we get everybody enrolled. Now, mind you, we have 49 million people in the country who are uninsured today. All but those who are not legally in the country can now get some form of coverage. So it's close to 40 million. I'm not saying we're going to see 40 million people enrolled in the coming year, but the overwhelming majority can get some help. And so it's really important that we help to explain in such a way that people understand how it will affect their lives, their families' lives. And as that happens, I think we're going to see incrementally a very large number of people get coverage.
All right. And to you, Joseph Entos, in the meantime, you've still got members of Congress putting forth bills to try to overturn Obamacare. Is that going to continue, or is there finally a realization that come October 1st, something is going to happen?
Plenty of bills are introduced in Congress every day. Most of them go nowhere. This is something that Republicans in the House regularly do, not because they think that such legislation would actually be enacted, but as a sign
to make a point.
It's to make a point.
37 times.
But as John Boehner said the day after the election, the ACA is the law of the land. Okay, so. The leader of the House is well aware of what's going on here. None of them are unconscious about this. They know that things are changing. What Boehner also meant, though, was that we're going to live with the warts and the problems that were built into the law in the first place.
And what do you expect to happen on October 1st?
Well, I think that's a good question. There's going to be a lot of variation. I think that...
Is variation another word for confusion?
Well, yeah, there will be confusion. I think the biggest part of the confusion will be that the target audience, those who are uninsured or those who buy their own coverage, they probably don't really understand health insurance very well. It's a tough topic. Most of us don't, right?
Yeah.
You know, what is a deductible, for example? It's hard to know what this means. And so my big concern is that we can raise consciousness, but what we really need is one-on-one conversations with people between the uninsured and people who actually understand what the products are. And we won't know what the products are probably until sometime in September. But even then, this is a tough topic for everybody. So I think that's really the challenge.
And Julie, how is that going to be met, that challenge of basic education about what's going to be offered?
There's actually money in the law that is going out, and there are a number of people. They're called navigators. They're called assisters. There's still a role for brokers, for insurance brokers, to help people and to sit down, indeed, one-on-one, explain their options. One of the things that the law does is it simplifies within the exchanges what can be offered. We have, you know, standardized plans, platinum, bronze, gold, silver, and then there's a catastrophic plan for young people because because there was a concern that young people didn't want to have terribly comprehensive insurance, and that of course you need young people in the pool to help you know, sort of equalize the cost. So there is a catastrophic plan for young people, but there's really only those, you know, what is that, five different possibilities. And of course, you know, you can have sort of cheaper premiums and then more expensive. Your premium can be less expensive and your deductibles can be higher. That's the trade-off. And that's basically what you're looking at. They've standardized your options. That makes it a little bit simpler, but there will be people available to help you. And that's what this sort of education is about, is matching up people who need insurance with people who can help explain it to you. But Joe's right. It's going to have to be one-on-one. I mean, there's going to be portals. There's going to be, you know, ways to things online that will simplify the application process. But yes, there's going to be a need for people to actually have sit down with a person who can help walk them through this.
I would think the great challenge that you face, Ron, in encouraging people to become part of this is to draw those young people into a mindset that even though they're healthy now, things do change.
I'm very encouraged what I think the prospects are for getting young adults covered. Now, you're right to highlight that as an issue. Young adults are the age cohort that is most likely to be uninsured. Part of it is because some of them feel invincible and they won't need health care, but another part of it is they feel they can't afford health coverage. They are going to get disproportionate help, and we can go over how they're going to get that disproportionate help that will bring them into coverage.
Ron Pollack of Families USA, he's also board chair of Enroll America. Short break here. We'll deal with your questions when we come back. And we have many questions, as you can imagine, on the Affordable Health Care Act, which will begin enrollment October 1st, and that enrollment will run until March 30. Ron Pollack, just before the break, you were talking about young people and why you believe that ultimately they will want to become part of the program.
The key to this, Diane, is that if you get coverage in these new exchanges, if you have income below 400% of poverty, now that means for a family of four, that's $94,200. For an individual living alone, that's about $46,000. So it reaches pretty well into the middle class. Those, you will get very significant tax credit subsidies in the thousands of dollars. Now, what's critical with respect to young adults is that these subsidies are going to be provided on a sliding scale. And what that means is the lower your income, the higher the subsidy you're going to receive.
Okay. All of a sudden, what strikes me is, are the educators being educated, Julie?
Well, one of the interesting findings is the Kaiser Family Foundation does this monthly tracking poll, and they actually talked to oversampled young people this month. It just came out yesterday, and they found, I think to their surprise, that 70% of young people said that it's very important to have health insurance. And you know, that everybody assumes that young people are not going to be interested in having this insurance, that they'd rather spend their money on other things. And interestingly, 2/3 said that they worried about not being able to pay medical bills if they had a serious illness.
Seen what's happened to perhaps their own parents.
Yeah, I mean, that I think, you know, some of this information is kind of getting through. And we saw this in Massachusetts. Remember, Massachusetts, it's kind of a laboratory for this. They passed this requirement for people to have health insurance back in 2006. They had a very successful marketing campaign. They got the Red Sox involved. They reached out to young people. And they did get, you know, quite a number of young people to sign up.
And since these young people are in entry-level jobs, or they may not have a job yet, they will get the largest subsidies. They will get the disproportionate help. And that's why they are going to find it much more valuable, because they won't have to pay as much out-of-pocket for those insurance
premiums.
Julie,
you didn't answer my other question about educating the educators. You know, you've got to have, in these one-on-one conversations, people who know the full range of options and are good communicators.
That's one of the things that's been going on. There has been money through the Affordable Care Act to train the trainers, if you will. And it's now this is one of the
How
places.
How many trainers have we got?
I don't know exactly the number of trainers, but I do know this is
it's
one of the places where it's
thousands.
Going. This is where it's going to be uneven, though, because in the states that are doing their own exchanges, there has been money. There's been a fair bit of money laid out for that states have been drawing on to train, as I said, these navigators and assisters. In states where the federal government is doing the exchanges, there has been less money for that and less effort. So I think you're going to see this is where there may be, a differential that, you know, that when you go to the exchange itself, it will look, you know, the same. But the amount of backup that you have, I think, will be different in those
states. Joanne Tosh, you look a little skeptical.
Well, more than a little skeptical. The HHS standard for training for these people is that they have to know about the mechanics of signing somebody up for coverage, not what people really need to know, which is, what do the options actually mean? So there is no training in that. Now, ideally, the states, for the people that they're responsible for, will not follow HHS's guidance here, and they will in fact do the right thing, which is invest their own money, which they're going to have to, in order to train their people about their specific options. But in fact, all of these volunteer organizations that say we're going to help, it's very unlikely that they're going to have a consistent level of information to give to people, you know, which I think is a big, big concern.
You know, Joe, I got to take a little issue here. We at Families USA are actually providing training in the District of Columbia for the folks who are going to be navigators. There is going to be a very systematic process of training people, and it's not just on process. It'll be on substance. Yeah, we've had half a dozen staff people crashing on putting together careful educational programs so that the people who are going to be doing this work can be proficient. Now, at one point, though, I want to underscore that Julie said a moment ago. There are going to be differences from one state to the other. And Julie is absolutely correct in saying that those states where the federal government is running the exchanges, the federal government has less money for administering the exchanges in the states that it has responsibility for than the states have received.
Why is that?
Because Congress, in its efforts to repeal and to obstruct, has said, in effect, we're not going to provide appropriations. And so as a result, in the 33 states where the federal government is going to be running the exchanges, the total amount of money for these navigators is $52 million. This includes states like Texas and Florida. In Connecticut alone, which is running its own exchange, they have $17 million. And I think you're about to have Rebecca Pierce from Maryland. I think Maryland has about $45 million. So it is uneven. Over time, this is going to change. But there are going to be people on the ground. One other thing I should say is that there are a lot of other groups that are going to be providing help. For example, community health centers. Right now, there are 4,000 outreach workers in community health centers across the country. The community health centers have now received $150 million so that there'd be more outreach workers. And so there are going to be a total of 8,000 outreach workers. They will be adequately trained, and they will be able to do this work.
We've got lots of questions. Let's start in Lammi, Finland, with Pamela. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for taking on my call.
Surely.
I'm calling, as I said, from Finland. I'm an American citizen. And I was that's my parent in the background, even though I'm from a completely opposite part of the house for me.
That's the first time we've had a parent on the program.
Well, maybe he wants to do that. I don't know.
Sure.
Anyway, I know that you have lots of calls. But as I said, I was recently diagnosed with MS, and my husband and I were thinking about moving back to the United States. But now, because of all the health care conundrum, we can't decide it was better to stay in Finland, where I have my health care. I've been on the system with the Finnish health system for 5 years. Or is it better to go back to the United States? Because I don't have previous coverage. I have previous coverage in the United States, but I haven't lived there in 5 years, so it lasts. So what is anything in the works for people like me?
Yeah. Julie, what's your response?
Well, actually, you will, starting January 1st, be able to get coverage regardless of your MS. So that's something that you
because
would not...
Because pre-existing
you will not be able to be denied because of, or charged more.
Right.
Because you're a woman, actually. That's another change. So those are all sort of changes.
But is she better off in Finland or is she better off in the United States?
That I can't say.
Wrong.
So I can't say that I'm an expert on the Finland healthcare system.
Yeah. I'll bet the Finnish ambassador calls in this morning.
Right, but I will say that as the Affordable Care Act matures, and it's going to take a while. Any new program, it takes a while. You know, we had this expansion.
But wait a minute, Ron. I want to get specifically to Pamela and her situation. Pamela, how good is your coverage in Finland?
100%.
She's not going to get 100% here in the United States. But we're going to come closer and closer to having everyone covered. But it's going to take some time.
Go ahead, Joe.
You know, the first thing I think about is not the 100%, but the quality of care. I think that's the issue for you.
And Finland has superb quality of care.
And like every other place, including the United States, it depends on what part of the health system you enter, who your physician is, how you're connected to the specialists, and so on. It's a very, very complicated issue.
Pamela, you clearly have some research of your own to do. I wish you all success. Let's go to Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Diane. It's such a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you.
Every day.
Good to have you.
Listen, for families who live in Massachusetts, as you all know, we have MassHealth. My family luckily qualified, which was a savior last year. What's going to happen to us being on MassHealth? Is that going to change for us here in Massachusetts? Am I going to start having to get on to the national plan?
Julie.
No. Oh, go ahead, Ron.
Go ahead, Ron.
The program in Massachusetts will continue. Actually, it'll be augmented somewhat. And one of the things that Massachusetts is doing is that when people get subsidies that will help them pay premiums, Massachusetts will actually provide a supplement to make sure that that subsidy is even larger. So Massachusetts is building on what it already has, and is now that the national, we're going to see this nationwide, Massachusetts is building on that and is improving further what Massachusetts has already offered.
Okay, but does she have to switch from Massachusetts to the national plan, Julie?
No.
She stays on the
mat.
Okay, does that answer it, Tanya? I guess
And one more follow-up. Next year, because I'm a realtor, I change my income every year. Should I not qualify for MassHealth next year, would there be a program for me?
Well, of course, there is, as Ron said, there is this subsidy program through the exchange, the federal program, and that depends on your income. So, you know, once again, you have to find out the specifics in your income.
And that applies equally in terms of the subsidy, irrespective of what state you're in, except in Massachusetts.
Well,
provide a supplement.
Well, but Massachusetts may have different standards.
All right, let's go to Evansville, Ohio. Rebecca, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, actually, my husband and I are self-employed professionals, and we have three children, one of which was born with multiple health issues. This was over 5 years ago. You know, in the past, his health insurance was denied. Before this health care law passed, we were not able to get him insurance at all based on his pre-existing conditions. Once the health care law passed and incorporated children, they couldn't deny him, but they offered us a premium plan for him, which costs $1,200 a month. Just for him, that's more than our mortgage. The plan they offered for my two daughters and myself is less than one-third of what they offered for him. They denied my husband altogether. As a result of that, we are no longer self-employed. I have now a job with a company that offers health insurance in order to cut that cost because we can't afford $1,200 a month. You know, we've never asked for it to be free, but that seems like a really outrageous price. I'm concerned for other people like us who are self-employed now going into this system. Are they going to be offered health insurance at some outrageous cost, and then because they're offered this health insurance, excluded from programs run by the state that would offer them insurance?
All right, Rebecca, let's see if we can address your questions. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Julie.
No, this was, you know, when the health law first went into effect, there was an immediate ban on excluding children who had pre-existing conditions. But as the caller mentioned, there were a lot of cases where they were charged very high premiums, even though they could no longer be excluded. That's what's going to end on January 1st, is the idea of charging. You can not only not exclude people with pre-existing conditions, you can't charge them more. Everybody's going to be in the same pool. Everybody's going to be charged the same. That's what's leading to what we keep hearing about, this rate shock, because everybody's going to be in the same pool. And so people with pre-existing conditions who will be more expensive, and the concern is that the healthy people are going to have to pay more to make up for the people.
Out,
right.
Of course, Joseph.
But you know, the other part of this is not specific to this family, but the other part of this is that they've also changed the rules about age rating. In most states, older people, say over 55 or so, paid eight times the amount that people, say, 25 would pay. Now it's down to 3-1. What that means is that the average premium for younger people will be much higher than it was before, and for older people, much lower than it was before, relative to the coverage they used to have. Now, the other problem is that the coverage is also richer. So that means that the average cost of the premium will go up for everybody. It's a very complicated story. But what it boils down to is, once again, if you don't have somebody guiding you with your specific information, it's hopeless.
All right. To Michael in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
Fine, thank you. Go right ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm the coordinator of benefits for a very small nonprofit. We have four full-time employees. And what I'd like to know is, where do we go, or what path do we follow for information or guidance through the affordable health care system?
Well, it's going to be different depending on what state you're in. So
He's in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Yeah, so Michigan is one of the states where the federal government will be running the exchange. And the key source of information will be a site called healthcare.gov that's currently online. But there's going to be a whole lot more information provided through healthcare.gov, and there'll be a 1-800 number. That's the way you're going to get much of your information. I just want to add one thing to what Joe was saying before. in response to Rebecca's question. You know, it is true that when you reduce the disparity in premiums between those who are older and those who are younger, it does mean that for younger people, the premiums come up. But that's only half the story. The other half of the story is that since these young people tend to be in lower paid jobs or may not have a job, they're going to qualify for the largest subsidies. And ultimately, what a young adult is going to be concerned about is not what's the overall premium, it's going to be what do I have to pay out of pocket. And with those subsidies, the overwhelming proportion of young adults will be paying a whole lot less.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we've got lots of callers waiting. I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. By the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
A debut novel by a woman born in a Tehran prison in 1983. It's the story of a group of Iranian political prisoners and the children they left behind. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. As we talk about the new Affordable Health Care Act, joining us now by phone, Rebecca Pierce. She's Executive Director of the Maryland Health Connection, and that is Maryland's state-based exchange. Good morning, Maryland.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you with us. Forgive me, Rebecca. Tell me why Maryland decided to set up a state health insurance exchange and not go with the federal option.
Well, Maryland has always been committed to healthcare reform, and I think the Affordable Care Act gave us a new set of tools to be able to take that further. So on the day after the Affordable Care Act was signed, Governor O'Malley signed an executive order to put in place a committee to determine exactly what pieces of healthcare reform we would move forward with in the state. And the state determined, stakeholders included, determined that the exchange is an important place to be able to move forward for us, to be able to implement an exchange that's right for all of Maryland and Marylanders, as opposed to something that the federal government would set up for all of the states.
And tell us briefly just what your own exchange is going to look like, what choices people will have.
Sure. So Maryland Health Connection currently will have about 13 medical and dental carriers offering up to 300 medical and dental plans. We'll also have 9 managed care organizations offering Medicaid plans. People will be able to see quality data for each of their plans, and they're also going to be able to pare down their specific choices based on the provider that they're interested in using.
And how much money has been allocated to education, to provide guidance for individuals who are trying to sort out the options?
So we are actually still in our procurement process for our training vendor, so I can't give you the actual number. But what I can tell you is that we're anticipating training over 5,000 people in the state. We have about 2,000 to 3,000 brokers that we're going to be working with, and they'll be getting about 8 to 10 hours of training from us, all the way to navigators who are going to be getting about 120 hours worth of training from us. So across the board, it will range across the board, but we anticipate about 5,000 people.
You know, what strikes me is that already this morning we've heard from a number of different people with different kinds of problems. Will those trainers be able to train people to handle that broad variety of issues and personal problems?
Well, that's our goal. We certainly have, we're going to be doing scenario-based training so that people understand specific scenarios for people and are able to answer those questions. We anticipate that there will be some people that will be training to about 80% and be able to answer about 80% of the questions, and then we'll have to be training a next set of people to be able to answer every single question.
I see. What snags have you run into along the way?
Well, timing, of course. We're setting up something that's brand new in a short period of time.
Sure.
So it's really a timing issue more than anything else.
Will you be ready on October 1st?
Yes, Maryland will absolutely be ready.
Rebecca Pierce, she's Executive Director of the Maryland Health Connection, and that is Maryland's state-based exchange. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. And here is an email from Josh in Lake Wales, Florida. He says, I look forward to having the opportunity to purchase health insurance. My problem is the unknown cost. Will coverage be $250 or will it be $1,000? I need to know. And are there price ranges available? A ballpark figure would be great. Julie.
Of course, this has been the question since the day the law was passed. And it's getting close. And of course, you know, everybody's frustrated because we still don't know. But so far, we have 9 states who have reported. And there's a new analysis from Avalere Health. They crunch a lot of numbers. And they're looking at the second lowest cost silver plan, because that's what the subsidies will be based on. And they have found a range so far of that second lowest cost silver plan from $205 a month to $433 a month.
Okay.
So that's basically the range that we're looking at. Now, this can vary dramatically. It depends on the area of the, not just the area of the country, it depends on the area of the state. It depends how much competition there's going to be. So, you know, it could, you know, things depend on where you live. It depends not just on what's going to happen in Florida, but what part of Florida. But again, that seems to be the range that we're looking at, you know, sort of between $200 and $400 for that kind of mid-level plan.
All right.
Again, that's a pretty, as Joe pointed out, that's a pretty comprehensive plan. It's got more benefits. People in the individual market have tended to buy plans with pretty spare benefits because, again, this has been a not very functional market. It's been where people go who really tended to need insurance, so they tended to be sicker. So they tended to have sort of lower premiums but very, very high deductibles and not a lot of benefits. So these are more benefits than people in this market are used to. On the other hand, they're probably going to have higher premiums than people in this market
All
are
right,
used to.
To New Orleans, Louisiana. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. This is Dr. Halpert. I'm actually a physician in Louisiana. My question is, I know you have mentioned increasing access, especially for low income as well as poor people who are mostly my patients. In the state of Louisiana where they are not expanding Medicaid, which I have to say I believe is unethical, but what options do we have in our state under the Affordable Care Act for those low income patients that I see? What I have noticed is that they have less options now with the Affordable Care Act, because at least before we were getting federal monies for uncompensated care.
So what's going to happen with respect to the Medicaid program, which is the safety net program, excuse me, will differ from one state to the other. So in half the states, the states are opting into expanding the Medicaid program.
But Louisiana is in Louisiana, not.
And the governor, Governor Jindal, has said he's not going to do it. What that means is that the people who need help the most, those below the poverty level, they are not going to get help.
This is crazy.
It is crazy. It is crazy. But increasingly, states are opting into this. We got now half the states. We've got 8 Republican governors who are strong opponents of the Affordable Care Act who have said, we're going to expand the Medicaid program. And these are very conservative governors who rush to the courthouse door to challenge the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. You've got governors in states like Arizona, Ohio, New Jersey, New Mexico.
But not Louisiana. Joe Antos.
So there has been a law on the books for at least a decade, EMTALA, I can't remember what it is.
Oh, since 1986.
1986, that says that public hospitals have to accept all patients, no exceptions. So in fact, what we're really talking about is payment. We're not talking about access to care. I think the doctor really got those two things mixed up. We're really talking about payment.
He's a physician, perhaps not operating in a hospital, but maybe on his own.
Right. It's entirely possible.
Yeah.
And so he's concerned about getting paid for the services he provides. Now, that's a legitimate thing. But the fact is that it's not that his patients have no place to turn.
I think it's very important.
May I finish
sure.
my
All
statement?
Finish.
That doesn't mean that eventually Louisiana and other states, Ohio is another great one, aren't going to recognize. Yeah, this is a political matter. In the case of Louisiana,
it's a humane matter. It's not just a political matter.
Of course, it's a humane matter, but Louisiana has a particularly difficult fiscal problem. They are effectively bankrupt as a state. We're not discussing their general bankruptcy, but decisions have to be made. If the citizens of Louisiana wanted it to change, it would change.
So I want to just make one, clarify one thing. Joe properly cited this so-called EMTALA statute. But the way it's characterized is if you need help, you go to a hospital, you're going to get care. Well, that's not quite true. The EMTALA statute is very limited. What it says is if you are at an immediate risk of life or limb, then you are guaranteed to get coverage in the hospital.
But if you're sick with the flu,
if you've got something that is not an immediate risk or life or limb, You don't have the right to get hospital care.
If you have cancer, let's go back. EMTALA stands for Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor. Those are the only things that are covered by that. So one of the big problems, if you show up at the emergency room and you have cancer, you don't get treatment. You have to literally be at death's door or in active labor in order to be covered by EMTALA. So what this doctor in Louisiana is saying, I have patients who come to me and need care. They are not going to be eligible unless they are over. It's the quirk of this, because of what the Supreme Court did last year in making this Medicaid expansion optional. The law was written so that the expansion would go up to 100%, or actually up to 133%, and everybody else would be picked up by the subsidies and the exchanges. Well, no one under 100% is allowed into the exchanges. So in many states like Louisiana, you can't qualify for Medicaid if you're an adult.
So what's
if you have income over
people?
Some tiny percentage of poverty, these people are not eligible for anything.
So you have to ask, why did they put that cutoff there? If the exchanges were good for somebody at 134% of poverty, why wasn't it good for somebody at 133%?
Well, you remember when the Affordable Care Act passed, we assumed every state, because it was a requirement, was going to implement the Medicaid expansion to 138%. And as Julie mentioned, last June, when the Supreme Court ruled on the Affordable Care Act, while it held that the act is constitutional, it changed this Medicaid expansion from a mandate to an option. And so as a result, the people who need health care the most and are least capable of paying for it are going to be left out in the cold unless the state decides to implement the expansion.
All right, let's go to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Randall.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I actually fit right into what you guys are talking about. I am 25, turning 26 in October, and luckily I'm fortunate enough to be under my mother's health insurance. But, you know, after I turn 26, I will not. My question is, I do not fit into the category that I make. You know, I think it was the statistic was 400% times the poverty level. So my question is, what options are there for me to get health insurance when I can't even afford, to pay for it, nor do I qualify for these new mandates?
I gather you make a salary in the $20,000?
On good years, yes, ma'am.
On good years.
So he actually will qualify, because an individual living alone, 400% of poverty is approximately $46,000. And so since he is below 400% of the federal poverty level, he will be eligible for a tax credit subsidy that's worth thousands of dollars.
400% is where the subsidies stop. The people who are eligible for subsidies, anybody can get into the exchange if they make poverty or above. 400% is where the subsidies stop. You can get into the exchange no matter how much you make. You just won't get a subsidy if you earn more than 400% poverty.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. But Randall, says he makes in the 20s in a good year. Now, how much is he going to get back in tax credits?
Well, I think a better way to answer this is how much is he going to get back in tax credits, but what's the maximum that he would have to pay?
Yeah,
we know that, and the answer is in the $20,000 range, it's probably around 5%, so it's probably about $1,000.
And by the way, these tax credit subsidies, it's not that you're going to get them when you file your IRS forms the following April 15th. What happens is you sign up for a plan, and as premiums fall due, the IRS will pay these subsidies to your insurance company.
Okay.
So you don't have money out of pocket
all
for
right.
that.
So how does that sound to you?
Oh, thank you all so much for helping my education in this matter. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for calling. What do you want to say, Julie?
It's like an automatic discount. I mean, basically, when you go to sign up, it's a discount off your premium as you sign up.
One last question from San Antonio, Texas. Tom, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I love your show, Diane.
Thank you.
I have a weird situation. I was making about close to $5,000 a month, and so I was on insurance by myself. A company paid for most of my insurance costs, so I only paid about $30 a week.
now I decided to get my family on it, and now I'm paying almost about $250 a week for my insurance. All of a sudden, my workload gets cut back, and I lose about $2,500 a month. Now I can barely pay my rent and my bills, and I can no longer back out of my insurance because I've already signed on with the company. Is there anything that I could do about that situation?
If you have an offer through your employment of health insurance, that's what you're going to wind
you're
up either
stuck with.
You are stuck with if it turns out that it's too expensive for you as an individual, which means if you're spending more than 9.5% of your income on premiums, then you can get out of employer-sponsored insurance and go into the exchange and get coverage. But it's only in that limited circumstance.
Sure.
But here's the problem. The way HHS interpreted the law, this does not apply to his family. And he mentioned that he added his family.
Right.
So, in fact, there's this disconnect, which is going to be very disruptive to people like him.
You know what? In the next few months, I sure want to have you all back and talk about how this is moving along and talk about whether they've been able to straighten out these stupid curlicues that don't work for anybody. Ron Pollack, Julie Robner, Joseph Antos, thank you all so much.
Thanks for having
us.
You're
welcome.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations.